This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Adrian Bejan is a professor of mechanical engineering at Duke who is particularly interested in how to make things more efficient. Not long ago, he discovered what he calls the constructal law in nature. It goes something like this. Systems flow, and to keep flowing, they must evolve and become more efficient. For instance, a river basin changes over time to ensure that the water from one body flows more efficiently into the water of another body. Sounds simple, but it's actually quite revolutionary. Adrian Bejan explains his theory and how it works in detail in a new book, which he's co-authored with Peter Zane. It's called Design in Nature, How the Constructal Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization. Adrian Bejan, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much for inviting me. And I hope to learn from you during this conversation.
Well, the first thing you will learn from me is how I can reduce your book to 13 words. You heard my description of the law in 13 words. Give us a better description.
Actually, I was thinking there is no better way to put it in 13 words. The principle is the realization that all shape and structure in nature, which means everywhere around us and inside ourselves, is design. It is evolving design, and it has direction in time. And it is the meaning these changes in configuration are aligned in time to for them to flow more easily, for greater access, to flow better.
So, I mean, I think we see that with a river system. Water is always trying to find the easiest way to get to the lowest point, essentially, right?
Yes, but your statement is actually a human speculation of what this being, quote-unquote, the water is trying to do. In physics, we do not speak that way. We see the phenomenon, in this case, the occurrence of design and the occurrence of evolution of design, and we see it as a phenomenon, and we summarize it with a statement of a natural tendency. And so, yes, the river basin has the natural tendency to generate design and evolution. The animal movement on the landscape is another river basin that shares the same tendency. Our own movement on the landscape illustrates it big time. You can pick examples from very small to very large, from the snowflake to the air traffic all over the globe.
So you've raised the question already, I think, in our minds about this, the nature of this design. In other words, is it something that we might consider, and we've heard this a lot lately, something like intelligent design? The design begins from some being at the start, is written into the process, and then everything flows from that grand plan? Or is the design something we discover after the fact? Oh, look, this is how it always comes out. It's got adheres to these rules of ratio and balance.
The constructor law is should put the intelligent design to rest, as well as it puts the doctrine of chance rolling the dice to rest. Physics, meaning what we can say about nature in our book of science, is a collection of very brief summaries called laws of how things are. And that is where the laws of mechanics came from, the laws of thermodynamics. And that is also the science that now has the constructor law in it. Design happens. It is a natural tendency. Evolution of design happens. That is also a natural tendency, meaning a tendency everywhere and of everything. It is not the wish or the will of one person, smart or not.
Where does randomness fit into all of this?
Plenty. Randomness goes a little bit like this. Think of the river basin. The constructor law speaks of its tendency to flow more and more easily in time. Along that route, the flow system impresses us with an architecture that looks like a tree. The architecture is constantly morphing. The architecture has armpits, these muddy banks between two small rivulets. Nobody knows what will happen in that block of wet mud, meaning earthworms or something else, vegetation growing. Nobody knows what tree log will fall across the rivulet. These are the random events, the chance events. But in spite of that lack of certainty, broadly speaking, the constructive law says two things. There will be a design which is tree-shaped, and it will be tree-shaped. And the second thing that the law predicts is that branches and armpits, the whole thing will flow more and more easily from day to day.
So it's always, always urging, and forgive these anthropomorphic kinds of distinctions or characterizations, but it's tending toward more efficient all the time in spite of or around these random events that are going to occur within time.
Correct. That's well put. And so it's about an urge that is natural. And is this? It's the natural character of the urge that makes our own urges natural, meaning our urge to be more economical, our urge to have engineering, our urge to have a better medical care, our urge to have better education, to live longer, and all these other things that we all have urges for, to have continuity as a family, for example, are about flowing more easily on the Earth's crust, more economically, and for longer.
You say in your book, constructive law teaches that just about everything is alive. Explain that.
Correct. The statement of constructive law actually defines what life is. It says that for a finite size flow system, so here we're talking about things we can see and touch, not about infinitesimally small imaginable subparticles. We're talking about many, many, many particles that are objects that we see. For a finite size flow system to persist in time, and to persist in time means to live, this flow system must have the ability, meaning the freedom, to change, to flow more and more easily for greater and greater access. This means it must have configuration and the freedom to change the configuration. So this definition of life is non-denominational. It's not for biology. It is for everything that flows and moves and contorts itself. If you don't get it, imagine the opposite. No flow, no contorting, and no changing. Well, that is a dead thing.
That's dead. Okay? That is dead as it gets. So we see this in everything, and you've got a couple of examples. Let's use one from nature and one a kind of a human construction. We'll begin with the snowflake.
Yeah, the snowflake is one of the discoveries that I made with the constructive law. I read that everybody agrees, quote-unquote, when I hear that statement, I think it's time for me to speak. everybody knows, quote-unquote, that the snowflake is dead. It's basically ice, and nothing flows through it. The hunch that I developed with the constructive law is that if I see a design, in this case something that's tree-shaped, then there must be something flowing. And in the case of the snowflake, what flows is heat. The water vapor from the cold atmosphere condenses, it solidifies on these needles of ice. And solidification means the release of the latent heat of solidification. It means that the heat is actually generated by the snowflake, and this heat has to be dissipated to the cold air, and therefore the system needs architecture. It needs a radiator to radiate this heat back to the cold air fast as possible. And there are actually two features of the design that the constructive law predicts. One is the tree-shaped configuration of the surfaces, from which the heat emanates. But and secondly, geometric fact that the snowflake has to be flat. The snowflake is a flake, not a ball. not a furry ball. It is a flake. It is the flatness along with the dendritic architecture that empowers this small object to dissipate heat so famously.
So it's universal in the sense that it's going to obey these laws and find the most efficient way, in this case, a system to dissipate heat, having been water vapor at one point. But also the other axiom that we take to be true and have never quite proved is that no two snowflakes are alike, and certainly for that matter, no two trees look alike.
Absolutely, this is the story of the wet mud in the armpits. Plenty of room in the predicted design, plenty of room for the random. They are not alike, but they're all snowflakes, or they all look like snowflakes. The lungs are not alike, but they are all tree-shaped, and so on. So the power and beauty of the law is that it brings everything under its umbrella, not only the animate and the inanimate, but also the pattern and the diversity. The diversity is basically the blurriness that rides on the sturdy branches of the design.
Well, one of the things it seems to me that your law has to take into account are the competing priorities of various systems. Let's take, for instance, a tree, an actual tree that's part of a river basin. It's growing there. It's growing along the bank. The water, to be more efficient, would love for the tree to be out of the way, I would guess, and keeps having to go around this complicated root structure. The tree, for its persistence, would love to stay there. It's also part of a number of other systems, right, that you could talk about, including the landscape and the earth. So the tree kind of evolves this ability to hang on tight in spite of the water, and the water keeps trying to push sort of which system is at play, and how does the law govern those competing priorities when it tries to rise above them all?
The answer is by having this balance between the channels or the tree of the river basin, which is horizontal, and the other channels, which is the tree of vegetation, which is vertical. To humanize the water, what the water wants. Water does not want to go through the river channel or through the tree itself. Water has to get back where it came from to complete its circuit in nature. Water has to get back up into the air. And it does it through a combination of paths. One is horizontal to the mouth of the river and therefore to the ocean, where there's a much bigger surface from which to evaporate and become steam again. The other one is through the vegetation. The vegetation is, in fact, river trees oriented vertically. Trees happen where there is water. By the way, big animals happen where there is water for the same reason, which is to put water back into the atmosphere. And that's how water completes its circuit in nature, with the design in every link of its moving chain.
It seems to me then one of the things we can draw and maybe most valuable for us in thinking about construct a law is the way all of these systems are so deeply and richly integrated.
They're interconnected because they're flowing together. Here we're not talking about links or networks. Those are dead words. The constructive law puts its finger on the fact that through every black line on a white piece of paper, there is a flow. The black line may look like a connection, but it is actually a conduit, a pipe, an electric wire, or a highway for our trucks. It's flow. The flow is the one that is both the mother and father of the design.
What then applications does this take, or what lessons can we draw from human design when we sit down to make things to serve our needs? Are we obeying these laws?
Well, absolutely. We have no choice. We're not that special. And we've been doing the right things all along. But before science was so evolved that now it has the constructive law in it, a lot of these correct moves were made by trial and error, especially in engineering. So with laws, we know much better and faster what to do. We also know what not to do. You see, and so benefits are all over the human realm. They are in engineering. First of all, it's conceptual. Now we know why the urge to engineer is something in each of us. The urge to have economics or to have economic sense is natural because it's about our own movement on the landscape. The urge to have longevity is and health is also natural. It happens, by the way, in longevity, life. This every animal is okay designed for that, among many other things, as the animal is designed for movement, The power comes from this more than promise, which is to lead the way, to allow us to not only to predict the future, but actually to design it for ourselves and to walk into it with confidence.
And not necessarily to imitate nature. If we wanted to fly, we might have machines that look like birds, but that's because they're going to have to look like that if it's going to fly.
The history of human flight actually began with inventions that looked like the birds, and they were actually not successful. I like a better example, which is, first of all, no live thing is copying another live thing. The dolphin is a smart mammal, but the dolphin did not copy the shark in order to look like a dolphin. Both animals, I mean, the two could not be more different, but both animals end up looking like a fish because each is in its own frame of its own movie of evolution. And because the evolution takes the animal body toward more and more efficient locomotion, now the two look alike, even though they are very different. It's the same with aircraft technology. Boeing is not copying a bird. Boeing is actually speed walking to stay in front of Airbus, and the better they make the airplanes, the more these highly complex constructs look like birds.
What about social constructs like political systems and economic systems? Same law?
Absolutely. Those are words for the design that facilitates our own movement on the landscape. First of all, let's be very clear about one fact. Things that move, meaning all of us alive, our society, move because they are driven. The driving, if they're not driven, they're not moving. The driving comes from power, which is generated by burning fuels. Fuels cost money, by the way. So movement means the consumption of fuels. And the metering, the accounting for the movements is known as economics or money spent or earned and things of this kind. So words of economics, business, government or social organizations refer or should be recognized as being descriptions of until now invisible drawings of our own movement or architectures of our own movement on the landscape. And so these things that are in place, such as the rule of law, or the government that keeps changing all the time, or education system, are the rules of the road or the channels through which we have been, in fact, lucky to be flowing in this advanced society.
So far. Adrian, thanks so much. What a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Frank.
Adrian Bejan is a professor of mechanical engineering at Duke University. His new book is called How the Constructal Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization. He's going to be reading from his book at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham on February 6th at 7 o'clock. Coming up next on the program, Governor Perdue ponders her future now that she says she won't run for a second term and the return of the Jade City Pharaoh. Stay tuned to the State of Things.